Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on a brand new week, with the week that contains the final 2 days of February 2017 in it, for this is the 27th day of February 2017. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. It's where we live. And that is, of course, where you go should you be taken by the madcap urge to join the zany multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. It being Monday, folks are sort of groggily wandering back in, probably after staying up too late watching the vindication of Steve Harvey, otherwise known as the Oscars, last night. Yeah, but if you do pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump in, you will be met. You'll be met by Anatole and Steve from Georgistan, V.T. Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who apparently isn't in much of a space-folding mood this evening, so you'll see him there just as Sparky. I'm there, too. And you can be, too. It's free. It's easy. Everything at The Horn is free. Nothing costs anything. We're just a little old listener-supported attempt at broadcasting. We try to raise $200 every evening, and here's where we stand relative to the month of February. I'm just going to put it this way so as to make things nice and simple. You know, there are two monthly challenges on the table. One is the Nudge the Norsky, courtesy of Chris in Germany. The other one is the Lick the Lithuanian challenge, courtesy of Marcy. And that would mean that that means that if we meet our fundraising goal for the month of February, then there will be an extra $75, which is great. And so in order to do that, thanks very kindly to Lucy and to Kath and to Arnold, our subscriber, and to a new subscriber, Karen, I believe. We have not as much to raise as we might otherwise expect to have. I just want to make sure that I'm not messing up the new subscriber. Yes, Karen. So thank you, Karen, for jumping in and becoming, Karen in Colorado, becoming a subscriber. We need all we can stand. We have only one subscriber for this day of the month, the 27th, so new subscribers are always welcome. All you got to do is go to contribute on the headonradionetwork.com page and click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and boom, there you are. But because of Karen and Arnold and Catherine and Lucy, we have remaining in order to lick the said Lithuanian and nudge the said Norsky. We have we have $280 to go, and that'll take care of February. That's it. And on top of that, thank you very kindly to Ralph's. Ralph's has put a $25 challenge on the table to get the evening started. So if that happens, we'll have only $230 to go to finish out the month of February and guarantee the licking of a Lithuanian and the nudging of a Norsky. Okay? So 280, one at 280, two at 140, four at 70, eight at 35, 16 at 1750. 32 makes my head hurt. But that's not terrible. That is achievable, one hopes. And so consequently, yes, $25, the next $25 that comes in will be matched by Ralph's. And when after that happens, then that means we will have $230 to go to finish out the month of February, a little ahead of schedule. That way we can let March come roaring in like a lion, and we will we'll be off and running as we head toward things like St. Patrick's Day and spring, etc. So that's very good, and thank you one and all for all you do to keep this little humble broadcast operation going. So, where to begin? Well, you know where, right? Of course, because it's not just the 27th day of February. Oh, no. It is, it's a Monday.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Hear the dulcet strains of the Calliope as it calls to you from off the carnival midway. Over here. This way, bud. Over here. Over here. Bring the whole family. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will find them all. Birthers, deathers, birchers, booger eaters, morans, ninthers, tenthers, deathers, baggers, trumpanzees, all manner of Republican weirdness, freakishness, bizarreness, hatefulness, meanness, spitefulness, and, well, as noted, general moranity. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. It's a bargain over here at the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed, monthly subscribers to the horn at $10. Well, goodness me, sakes alive. You're only paying less than 15, 16, 17 cents a program over the course of an entire broadcast year. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. So jump right in. Come on through the tent. Remember, visitors with children, small animals, including iguanas that you won on the Carnival Midway, throwing ping pong balls at a fishbowl. Messenger bags, wallets, purses, you should keep a hand on all of them, as the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Oh, and you will. You will, you will, you will. Because, well, we seem to be, and I think for the next 4 years or so, probably will be, in fact, it's an infestation is what it is. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
sorry, things, there are multimedia, let's just put it that way. But brethren, well, no, that's Wednesday. Brethren and sistren is Wednesday. Friends and neighbors, it would not be more in Monday, or it, let's put more accurately, more in Monday is certainly not a stranger to the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. And courtesy of our dear friend Beth in Dallas, saw this last night, and I thought, by God, if that doesn't have Moran written all over it, I don't know what does. So, let us stand not upon the order of our Moraning, but go after the Morans at once. Now, we all know that here in Merca, we have many concerns, and the ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpansies are all worried about a whole lot of stuff. They're worried about Mexicans with calves like cantaloupes, and they're worried they're worried about the Iranians, and worried about the Muslims in general, and they just sit around day after day after day, plumb skeert. But you know what skeers the trumpansies more than any other thing, friends and neighbors? Uh-huh. Yep. Homer sectionals and transgenders. Nothing puts the fear to a trumpansie quite like somebody that they imagine doing things that they themselves would never do, but are really, really curious to ruminate upon. I think ruminate is the right word here. And so it is that down in Texas, they had themselves a plum shown off hissy when it come time for the state wrestling tournament. Wow, what, did you think I was going to say that somebody down there wanted a pizza delivered to a gay wedding or something? That's so Taliban-diana and so last year. No, Texas just proved to us that there's ever so much more to be worked about here in Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, amen. So much more to worry about. Including wrestling. All friends and neighbors, kitties and cousins, aunts and uncles. Down in Texas, they've been having the Texas State Wrestling Championships. And no, they we're talking about high school. We ain't talking about no gator wrestling nor steer wrestling nor pro wrestling. We're talking about high school wrestling, the classic stuff where folks grope around each other on the ground and try to pin one another to the mat and maybe pick up a handy dandy little okay, that's good. Earther pointing out what your trumpansie fears most. Earther says, I would have guessed it was toothbrushes, Brother Bob, or grammar. No, it's Homer sectionals and your transgenders. But anyway, high schoolers down in Texas and around the rest of the nation, some of them participate in wrestling. And wrestling is an intense sport. It's a one-on-one, literally mano a mano
form of ancient struggle. And there's weight classes and stuff, and sometimes your participants will get themselves a nice little eating disorder trying to make weight in a given class. And so we find ourselves considering the case of Mac Beggs, B-E-G-G-S. Mac Beggs is a pretty darn fine wrestler. Mm-hmm. Mac Beggs is a guy. To be fair, Mac Beggs is a trans boy. Mac Beggs was born female, or identified as female at birth, I think is probably the better way to look at it, but knew all along that he was not a she. And so, apparently Mac Beggs had, and you may be surprised, but it is the absolute damn truth, there are civilized people in Texas, I know it. We've got a lot of them listening to this program. I've got dear friends who are progressive Texans. Most of the progressive Texans who listen to this program will take a back seat to no progressive from anywhere else in this country. And they may actually be tougher because of where they have to be a progressive. I mean, you want to talk about tough? Stand up against pipelines and poisonous water as a member of the Waco Friends of Peace down there in Waco, Texas, with my buddy Dr. Allen. That's tough. That's guts. Right there in the belly of the beast. Well, Mac Beggs goes to Trinity High School in Euless, Texas. 2 years ago, Mac Beggs began to transition. And Mac Beggs, works. Regardless of which direction one is going, transition takes a little hormonal help. And Mac Beggs is on, among other things, testosterone. And Mac Beggs thought, again, Texas, don't hold it against him. Mac Beggs thought it would be more than appropriate if he, who enjoyed wrestling, was to wrestle with all the other boys. Seems reasonable, doesn't it? At least it does to me. Well, not according to the sanctioning body that oversees sports in the public schools of Texas. That group is called the University Interscholastic League. And they told Mac Beggs, hell no, you ain't competing as a male, even if you are one. You gotta compete as a female. As I told Beth, I reckon Mac Beggs should just consider himself lucky that he didn't have to compete in a goddamn hoop skirt and them big old ruffled bloomers. And so it was, according to a story from the Washington Post by the Kent Babb of February 25th, and so it was that Mac Beggs won
The Class 6A Girls State Championship in Texas High School Wrestling. He beat Chelsea Sanchez in the 110-pound classification in a 12-2 victory. Mac Baggs was unbeaten in 52 matches against other girls. Or rather, I should say, because it gets a little complicated, and I apologize for what I just said. Mac Baggs was unbeaten in 52 matches against girls. Because I don't know. Because Texas. Because Texas Governor Dan Patrick, who, as Beth noted, is only concerned with where Mac Beggs goes potty. But there is, you know, there are actually overtones here for and implications for people far and wide in the United States. Because after all, it was just last week that the administration of Comrade Kumquat decided to roll back protections for trans kids in the public schools of the United States. One of the mamas, and understand, being a sports parent in Texas, as in other states, it can be an intense thing. One of the mamas of the other girls, what got whooped, her name is Patty Overstreet, said she's standing there holding her head high like she's the winner. She's not winning. She's cheating. It's not equal. Well, where did we hear that? Wasn't that last week? It's not equal! It's not equal. It's never going to be equal. No, it's not equal. It's sweet and low. Mac Beggs, to be fair, didn't want to wrestle in the girls' division because Mac Beggs does not identify as a girl. He was more than willing to go and do his best in the same classification in the boys' division. But a case like this presents problems for your average garden variety birth or death or ninth or tenth or bagger, bircher eater, booger eater, Trumpansie bigot. Mm-hmm. Because on the one hand, they hate Mac Beggs for being trans. And as Mama Overstreet there can point out, they consider Mac Beggs to be a girl. On the other hand, one proud daddy wrote a letter to the university whatever commission, demanding that Mac Beggs be forced to wrestle with the boys. Uh-huh. A few coaches and parents became concerned that their girls wouldn't compete on equal terrain. Other coaches disagreed, more impressed by Beggs's commitment to improvement and his mental preparation. Sides were established. Discussions became increasingly tense. Questions became more difficult to answer. Why, several girls asked the wrestling coach, who had asked to remain anonymous, was it okay for Beggs to receive hormones but not them? Why endure training and risk injury if there is no discernible path to victory? Well, it's time for those young ladies to be sent back to biology class, but it's Texas, and they're probably not allowed to learn about actual biology and the endocrine system and hormones and what they do to, what androgens and anti-androgens do inside the human body. Instead, they probably sit down for 9 months in biology class where they have a litany repeated at them, man and woman created he, them. And, you know, this is the weird side of the performance-enhancing drug debate. You remember the performance-enhancing drug debate? You remember Sammy Sosa and, what was his name? Mark, what's his name, with the Cardinals? Barry Bonds out with the Giants? Juiced to the gills? Right. But Mac Beggs isn't taking testosterone to be a better wrestler. Mac Beggs is taking testosterone because Mac Beggs is transitioning to male. There have been surgeries, for Christ's sakes. And you can only imagine what that conversation must be like inside that good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical home where they have to explain to Precious Lumpkin that the reason she can't take testosterone is because, well, she's a girl and doesn't need testosterone if she someday wants to do girly things like have babies. Or perhaps the conversation where mommy and daddy look at Precious Lumpkin and say, baby doll, you want to talk about uncomfortable in Texas. Sugar Lump, are you trying to tell mommy and daddy something? You want to take testosterone? Are you telling us that you want to be a boy? Honey, it ain't okay. We might need to go talk to the preacher man and see if we can get that demon exercised out of you. And at which point Precious Lumpkin says, well, mercy sakes, no, mama. You and I done went prom dress shopping. Stand by, please. Stand by. Ah, okay, back. brief telecommunications crisis. Yeah, and you know, that happens here. I mean, it's not like we're in a tall studio in New York or something like that. And we have a lost phone. Mark McGuire, thank you. Thank you, Carol Baker. Thank you, Mark McGuire. I could have gone on, I would have woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning going, Mark McGuire, thank you for... Thank you for saving me that. But anyway, the bottom line is that there in Texas, they're having all kinds of terribly confused conversations. One lawyer, the father of one of Mac Beggs's opponent, sent a certified letter. It says so, certified by God, in January, petitioning the University Intercollegiate League to move Beggs to the boys' division. And this month, he filed a lawsuit asking that Beggs be allowed to wrestle boys or else be removed from the championship tournament. The UIL, on the other hand, said, hey, we're just going by what's on the birth certificate. So there we go with the birth certificate again. Mm-hmm. Oh, what's more? The guy who sent the letter. Yeah, this is what happens in bigoted communities. The guy who sent the letter is named Bowdoin, Bauduin. Go figure. And he's a lawyer. And he's the father of a girl who was a friend of Mac Beggs back before Mac Beggs began to transition. Bowdoin said, and this is a quote from the news article, Bowdoin said he still refers to Beggs by the female pronoun because he struggles to see his daughter's old friend as a boy. She's in a no-win situation. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, other girls have forfeited matches. Yeah. And Taylor Latham, a girl who was scheduled to wrestle against Mac Beggs in the opening round of the state tournament. Her mama said, well, you need to forfeit your match. But Taylor wouldn't do that. And so, as the Washington Post article notes, her mother prayed for Taylor's safety and texted her inspirational songs. Of course, she also called the American Civil Liberties Union the day before the state tournament to ask for an emergency injunction to keep Beggs from competing. And then there's Taylor's auntie, who decided to go at it from a different direction. She just put a bounty on Mac Beggs. She told her niece that she'd give her $500 if she could beat Beggs on point, and she'd give her $1,000 cash if she could pin him. Lisa Latham, who is the auntie, said, "She's going for it. She's not quitting. God, I trust you. I go from praying, and God, I trust you to being angry at myself for teaching her not to quit." Meanwhile, Mac's mama simply said, "The system is set up to fail. It's failing Mac, and it's failing my..." I'm sorry. We're talking about Taylor's parents. Lisa said, "The system set up to fail. It's failing Mac, and it's failing my daughter." And she won. Mac Beggs did. And Lisa was relieved that her daughter hadn't been injured. You wonder if she worries about injuries as much with other with girls. You know, just damn. And here's the nasty side of it. As if there wasn't nasty already. They booed this child in Texas. The boos grew louder as Beggs advanced through the tournament, the chatter throughout the arena intensifying. "Here comes the guy," one young wrestler said as Beggs stepped onto the mat for his first match Friday. One wrestling coach, you know, an adult, said, "If you really want to be a boy, why don't you wrestle the boys?" And another coach said, "She'd get killed." Meanwhile, Mrs. Overstreet appears to be... Mrs. Overstreet still doesn't seem to understand the problem. She's, "If you want to play the games, you have to play it fair. I don't care what sex you are. Don't go on the mat with the enhancement if my kid can't." Well, lady, if your daughter is transgendered, she can have testosterone too. Like I said, there's a reason I saved this for Moran Monday. Wonder how Mrs. Overstreet would feel if she walked by the open bathroom door one day and saw Precious Lumpkin standing there, you know, shaving off her, you know, or at least trimming her handlebar mustache. Because that's one of those things that comes with testosterone, of course. But I guess you could say that Mac Beggs had the last laugh. Because Mac Beggs won. They were booing him. And he was bloodied up. But he won the Texas State Girls Wrestling High School Championship. Yeah, oh, okay. A note coming in from Steve in New York. Steve says, the Texas crowd was just booing like Jesus would have. Well, of course. Meanwhile, Carol Baker points out, in Missouri, there is no girls' wrestling class. They have to wrestle the boys. There haven't been many, but most of the boys wouldn't wrestle the girls. My best friend's son was a top wrestler. He came up against her in a state tournament. Thus far, every boy had forfeited the match. Michael wrestled her and won. And at the end of the match, he exercised the utmost in sportsmanship, and when he won his class at the state tourney, he gave her his medal. These are the people who are my friends, and now you see why. We have girls who wrestle here, and they have to wrestle the boys. I remember when Ferg was a freshman in high school, and there was a girl who wrestled. And she went out and whipped ass. Among the boys. But we have this obsession with imposing roles on people. And once again, whoever would have imagined that a bunch of bigots in Texas could turn an old Andy Kaufman comedy routine into reality. And you know what the conversation was about. And you know the hooting and the tittering and the hee-hawing, because people's bodies wind up in odd contortions during a wrestling match. You know, faces, behinds, crotches, whatever. And the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelicals can't watch something like that happen on a wrestling mat, which is about as, well, no, on a wrestling mat, which is non-sexualized, without themselves, inside their dirty Christian minds, sexualizing it. Because Merca. Because Puritanism. Because Neo-Calvinism. Steve is a little confused, and understandably so. And he says, am I understanding this right? The troglodytes didn't want to allow the boy to wrestle as a boy, but then they were pissed off at requiring him to wrestle in the girls' class? Just trying to understand. Yes! On both counts, yes. Because the boys would have had a snit. I mean, what if something girly's going on when I'm a wrestling her? And that usually doesn't bother them when the wrestling is taking place in the back seat. Never mind. But you see the problem. truly, with a genuine cultural observation, Ron in Raleigh points out, remember, Ellie Mae always whooped Jethro when they wrestled. Damn straight she did. damn straight. So I just figured that would set the tone for this Moran Monday. Now, Steve from Georgia, stand in the chat room. Don't be a bigot. Steve says, only in Texas. Let them secede. Do us all a fucking favor. Yeah, but if they go, I mean, I'm pretty sure the Georgia Secondary Schools Athletic Commission, or whatever it's called, doesn't exactly have an enlightened view on trans athletes there in Georgistan, Steve. I mean, it's Georgistan. And if Texas goes, Georgia will want to go with them, and then Alabama will, well, wait a minute, and then they're, right. And they, and besides, they all know no better to better than to secede, because they're sitting there getting all that money from New York and Massachusetts and California and Washington and Oregon, and, well, they like money. Right? Oh, and thanks. Not anonymous thanks. They're my thanks, but they're going out to an anonymous person who, yes, met Ralph's challenge and saw it and doubled down on it. Reissuing a challenge for the next $25 to come in, therefore thereby doubling the next $25 that come in. And let's see, so now we are down to 4:30 minus that's 4:20. And thank you Paul very kindly. Down to 4:16. Paul says, I'm a buck short of my own goal this month, but at least I got in. Hope you're feeling better, and Ferg, too. Well, it's this getting better thing is a slow process, and had a bit of a setback today. Every now and then, you got to do it, because otherwise you don't know. Every now and then, I do something crazy and try to eat food. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. And well, it didn't. And so I've spent pretty much since about 9 o'clock last night in pretty horrible pain. But I'm here. I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. Let the bells ring out and the banners fly. It's too good to be true. Feast your ears on me, but I'm here. But thank you for the kind wishes, Paul. And Ferg as well. Ferg is off having a grown-up adventure right now. Living away from home. So, you know, we're hoping the best for him. So that's, you know, that's just a start to Moran Monday. But we have ever so much more. How about this? I'm going to have to check here to I'm going to double check on just exactly what state this comes from. Oh, there it is. Ah, yes. Sorry, Darlene. Dateline Stamford, Connecticut. So this story goes back to, because it's Moran Monday. This story goes back to Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. And it's about a Connecticut couple named Heather Lindsay and Lexine Charles. Heather Lindsay and Lexine Charles are a couple who lives there in the greater Stamford area. Notice I mentioned that it took place over Martin Luther King Jr. holiday weekend. Well, the problem's been going on for a while. Because Heather is white and Lexine is black, they have dealt with multiple instances of having their home vandalized with racist graffiti. and you know, the story doesn't say here exactly what the racist graffiti is, because the Associated Press doesn't want to offend the delicate sensibilities, you know, too sensitive, of its readers by making them read the actual words or a description of the actual symbols that that Trump voters use, Trumpansies, in manifesting their various and disgusting hatreds. So we don't know exactly what was done, but we can use. But the Associated Press apparently wants us to use our imaginations. So over the Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, somebody came to Heather Lindsay and Lexine Charles's home and spray painting hate words or hate symbols on their home. It's happened before. And when it did, Heather and Lexine painted over it, by God. But they also asked for help. They asked for the city of Stamford to use its police force to go around the neighborhood, try to find out who was doing it, and to maybe put a patrol car on their street to make sure that the next time they don't just burn the house down, the Trumpansy racists, with, you know, Heather and Lexine in the house. This, the city of Stamford, has refused to do. So this time through, Heather and Lexine said, well, all right, screw it. We're not painting over it again. And you can well imagine the reason therefore. Because it costs them money to paint over the vandalism. I'm sure a few cans of spray paint or a bucket of paint or whatever it is, it probably costs less than their homeowner's insurance deductible. So their homeowner's insurance is essentially worthless. Or at least no help. Okay? So this time through, Heather and Lexine said, nah, screw it. We're going to make the city and everybody look at what racists, Trump voters, in our city do to an interracial couple. The city of Stamford, and let me remind you, Heather and Lexine are the victims of this crime. The city of Stamford declared their home to be a blight when they refused to spend their own money to paint over the vandalism of a bunch of nasty ass, or probably Trump voters, who, of course, as we all know, are suffering from terrible, debilitating economic anxiety that arose from that one being in their White House for the last 8 years, and the economic anxiety was actually created during the 8 long tortured years of the reign of error of George W. Bush. But the bottom line is that, I have not seen a resolution of this, but the city of Stamford was willing to impose a $100 a day fine on Heather Lindsay and Lexine Charles because they refused to do their own labor to remove the vandalous work of people who just want to make America great again. So, Moran Monday nomination okay for the City Council of Stamford, Connecticut?
Yeah, I think so.
I suppose this being more in Monday, but given the oh there it is, okay. Well, the AP didn't, but the Stanford Advocate. Well, the Stanford Advocate posted a photo, and yeah, it's a white garage door, and spray painted across it is that disgusting word that has an E and an R and an I and an N and two G's and isn't ginger. The NAACP has gotten involved. Thank you, Darlene in Connecticut says, yep, Moran nomination. Justified. To the Stanford City Council, providing a little bit of background, Darlene also points out, oh my God, the interracial couple, got blamed. What BS, eek? Well, yeah, they're being blamed for not covering up the hateful racism of the racists who vandalized their house. And, you know, Heather Lindsay owns the house, and she said she just that she will remove the racial slur at the same point when the authorities in Stanford, in a neighborhood called Bull's Head, do their damn job. And, quote, not just cover it up and sweep it under the table as they have done in the past. Because, see, it's not like this is a big mystery there in the neighborhood, because she has repeatedly reported to the police that she and her husband have been vandalized on numerous occasions. She's also reported that her neighbors, and it's a strange way to use the word neighbor, people who live in the same neighborhood with her, I don't think neighbor really qualifies, I just say that as a practitioner of the art of word knowing, have yelled that same word that's on their garage door at her husband. At least three of the people who live near her have done that. The NAACP, as noted, is on the case. Darnell Crossland is legal counsel for the state NAACP in Connecticut. He said, for them to be called that, and he used the word, it must be so hurtful that they can easily just erase the board and suffer within quietly by themselves and act like nothing happened. And in fact, that's what the Stanford police asked them to do. They were requested to take the sign down and to just act normal like nothing happened. Darnell Crossland went on and said, what we want you to do is to go canvass this neighborhood and find out who did this. What we want you to do is put a patrol car out here and act like you give a damn and make sure these people are protected. Meanwhile, Ted Jankowski, the city director of public safety, emailed a statement to the Stanford Advocate and said, the incident that occurred is disgusting and is something the Stanford Police Department continues to have under investigation. But, see, it happened at night, and there were no witnesses. So the Stanford police's hands are effectively tied, except for the fact that no one put a gun to the Stanford police's head and made them issue the blight citation. There is a wrinkle. This time through, the police department said, okay, We'll remove the word. No cost to you. But this time through,
the couple said, ha-uh. Because there's really no sense in erasing the board so that they can paint on it again. Ted Jankowski, director of public safety in Stanford, went on to explain, but what about the neighborhood?
The neighbors were very upset when the incident occurred and truly felt for the couple. However, the residents who have condemned the racial incident are upset and are complaining about continuing to see the racial slur and how it is disturbing the peace in the quiet neighborhood.
Well, maybe if they would do a little bit more work to combat this kind of racism, like, you know how it runs in a neighborhood. Everybody talks about everybody else. They know. Somebody knows who did it. Meanwhile, one of the neighbors, Paul Ivanko, said, "Well, there are kids in this neighborhood. Why do we have to subject them to that?" Guess what, Paul? Some of those kids in the neighborhood probably hear it every night at home.
Meanwhile, Lawyer Crosland said, they're not going to suffer alone. We're going to suffer with them. And we're not going to have them be made a target again.
And, by the way, just in case you were wondering, that's not the only avenue being pursued. Heather Lindsay has owned the home and lived there since 1990. Let's see, 90, 2000. Yeah, that'll be 27 years. And they've scheduled a foreclosure trial on her house for March the 7th. Her neighbors have had numerous other blight notices served on her. And still, no meaningful investigation of the three identified people who can't help screaming that word when, they see Mr. Charles, or Mr. Charles and Ms. Lindsay together.
There's some first-class dot connecting coming from Brother Deacon Asa.
The Trumpansies in Stanford probably confused the Bull's Head neighborhood with the Head Ranch in Texas, you know, owned by the Jimmy Dick Perry family. Geography, Asa notes, is not exactly a Trumpansie's strength. No.
So, I've seen nothing that says that the case has been resolved or that anyone's been caught or arrested. Oh, well. It's about 6 minutes past the hour. We've got $216 in fundraising to go for the evening. And what the hell? Let's engage in some conversation radio, shall we? I think we should. A couple other morons out there. This would be a nomination for, of course, the Comrade Kumquat administration. Yes. The Atlantic notes that something a little less than 20 years ago, the folks at the U.S. Energy Information Administration
decided to make a website for children about where energy comes from and the science that underpins those energy sources. They created the energy, U.S. Energy Information Administration did. They created a website called Energy Kids. They even went so far as to create a mascot, Energy Ant. At the bottom of the webpage, there's a picture of a school bus parked between a coal plant and an oil rig. And then there are drawings of wind turbines and solar panels and an energy-efficient light bulb. There are energy-themed Sudoku games and crossword puzzles and pie charts. It sounds like a fun little site for a kid who wants to learn about energy. Back during the 8 long, tormented, suffering years for those economically anxious Trumpanzees known as the Obama administration, the Energy Kids website actually won what the Atlantic describes as multiple international awards for content and design. One publishing company said it was the best of the best in open and engaging government. No more. Because, see, it wasn't just a website talking about how awesome coal, oil, and gas are, and, yeah, there's a picture of a wind turbine, and, yeah, there's a picture of a solar panel. There was also stuff about, you know, the cruel... Wait, I think we're going to have to add reverb when we use this phrase. The cruel Chinese hoax! Known as climate change. The website sought to teach kids about what happens when you burn coal and create greenhouse gas emissions, and what the greenhouse gas emissions do to the atmosphere, and what that in turn does to the planet, and, you know, global climate change, global warming. Shh. That's all gone now. Been scrubbed down the memory hole. Once upon a time, the section on coal said, in the United States, most of the coal consumed is used as a fuel to generate electricity. Burning coal produces emissions that adversely affect the environment and human health. Every word of which is 100% verifiably, undeniably true. Mm-hmm. It too has been scrubbed. It's gone. It's just disappeared. It is as if it was no more. If some little kid out there has been, or some kid, doesn't have to be a little kid, if some kid out there has been going to Energy Kids for, say, the last 2 years, well, it's not the same website anymore. They also got rid of a couple of pie charts. Uh-huh. One of them showed that coal was only responsible for 42% of U.S. Electrical generation in 2014. And it also, and another chart showed that it created 76% of the total carbon dioxide emissions that are linked to electricity generation. Gone. There was another sentence that said, reuse and recycling can also reduce coal's environmental impact. That has been taken out to the Trumpanzee education camp and put into the ponerizer and has been reponerized to say, reuse and recycling can also reduce the environmental effects of coal production and use. Significant difference there. Underground mines have less of an impact on the environment compared to surface mines. Got changed to underground mines generally have a lesser effect on the landscape compared to surface mines.
landscape. You see, it's just that, you know, mountaintop removal only affects the landscape. You know, just like the guy who comes and cuts the grass. You know, he's a landscaper. That's all mountaintop removers are. They're just landscapers. And apparently, the Trump administration hates the word impact, because impacts of coal mining turned into the effects of coal mining. Reducing the environmental impacts of coal use got turned into reducing the environmental effects of coal use. Oh, Mr. Orwell. Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff disappeared. There used to be a sentence at Energy Kids that said, on the topic of oil, there are environmental concerns associated with hydraulic fracturing. Hydraulic fracturing has some effects on the environment. And this completely went away. The United States, with 4% of the world's population, produced about 17% of global carbon dioxide emissions from burning fossil fuels in 2011, the most recent year for which global data are available. The United States has the world's largest economy and meets 83% of its energy needs by burning fossil fuels. How's America going to be great again if we're only 4% of the world's population? That ain't great. That's downright pissant. And I guess, we can file that under the ongoing topic of things we would not be talking about if people had just gotten a simple question right. They haven't gotten there yet, Earther, but they will. Hey, kids, coal ash is a great whitening additive for toothpastes. I know. Like I said, it's Moran Monday. If you've got your very own Moran nominations, by all means, bring them to the table. Because, I, by definition, I don't see them all. Ron in the far frozen north asking, again with the ponerization? Oh, there's ponerizing all over the place, Ron. You can't get shed of it. Oh, my God. I mean, you leave something in the microwave too long, ponerized. And then, you know, you can probably go over to Lowe's and get yourself one of them freestanding electric ponerizers. Things get turned into pone. Yeah. And there's Steve from Georgia standing in the chat room. I'm feeling ponerized. Oh, for God's sakes, man, take a bath. Going back to Stamford, Connecticut. Ron in Raleigh writes, obviously, this is the work of Hillary Clinton. The devil! Supporters that are trying to make Donald Trump and other white nationalists look bad. After all, Wayne LaPierre said to watch out for this behavior just last week. You're darn right, he did. Okay. We've got a little debate going in the Department of the Art of Word Knowing. News Ninja Gene, a across the pond, says, I got a small bone to pick with you. Sorry to nitpick, but I have a request. Could you please not refer to the gang of misanthropes led by Donnie the Dictator, that's D-I-C-K hyphen T-A-T-E-R, as the, insert appropriate name, administration? Rather, could you refer to them as the, insert appropriate name, regime? After all, they are trying to destroy the administrative state. Jay Cruzen sent me a lovely picture of his family. The photograph was simply titled, the email was simply titled, My Interracial Photo. He said, I sent you a pic. What you're talking about is personal to me. If you want, I'll offer a $50 challenge. Well, it is personal. And the personal is political. And it's personal. Well, how do you say this? It's personal to anybody with a conscience, but it is gut-level personal to anybody who's ever experienced anything even remotely like this. So, there we go. Steve, from Georgistan, feeling ponerized. Bob, are you questioning my freshness? No, I just want you to get all the pone off of you. I mean, I know how to make a pone. I can ponerize. I can ponerize a 1 pound sack of stone ground cornmeal. I can make the scalded milk and all that stuff and let it ferment. And that's what it does when it's fermenting on top of the water heater with the wet towel over it. It's ponerizing. It's turning into pone. And it kind of sticks to you after a while. So, no, I'm not saying you're not fresh. I'm just, you don't want that stuff to stick to you. Right? You understand? Yeah. That's how it works. So, we were at $216 to go in fundraising. We're down to $211. No, I'm doing math. It's 211. Down to 191. Thank you to Matthew. Thank you, Matthew, very, very kindly. And 181 when we take into account the fact that our good friend Karen in California re-upped her subscription. $181 to go. Yay, thank you. So, lines are open. You know, the stress line, of course, works for some, not for others. One of these days I'll have time to get on the phone with the engineering at the people, with the people who make this little gizmo and find out what's going on. It used to work great. But anyway, the stress line number, named after the inimitable Bill Mr. Stress Miller, is 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. Meanwhile, you can also reach the program via 304-574-8178. And you can also get involved by reaching out from Skype to Skype, from anywhere on planet Earth. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn, is the contact. And so, like I said, break time. And your calls, or I can always... go further and, you know, filibobster some more. Not my favorite thing, but I can. And thank you very kindly, particularly, I trust that Matthew responded as he did in response to our anonymous contributor who saw saw Ralph's challenge and took her challenge and moved it forward. So thank you. Thank you very much. More on Monday. We'll continue after a break. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
By the station, Well, given the story about Stamford, Connecticut, I thought White Room might be appropriate for a little bumper to take us to the halfway point in the program. And at the halfway point in the program for this Moran Monday, the 27th of February, 2017, I can proudly announce that courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, we are now down to only $161 to go to finish February. That means if we raise that $161 tonight, that means that February is done, the Norsky is nudged, the Lithuanian is licked, and we get a jump on March. Cool? Cool. By the way, a note came in earlier from Graham in Australia, eagerly awaiting Jen's sojourn homeward. I think that's not too far in the offing. Perfect headline, Graham says, for a Moran Monday. Jeebus, this turd is a useless waste of plasma. I got a feeling that that's going to have some resonance with News Ninja Gene. Oh yes, oh yes. The cause? Well, the statement made by Marcus Aurelius, who remember, and because, yeah, we have to remember because the Trumpansies can't, promised to repeal and replace Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, on his first day in office. Remember that? Because I do. Well, he hasn't, and the reason he hasn't, you remember some years ago the kerfuffle that was started when one of the talking Barbies, when you did whatever you had to do to Barbie to make her talk, pull a string, push a button, whatever, and she would say, "Math is hard." Well, the Tangerine Tiberius said, and this is the headline, "Trump stumped. Nobody knew healthcare could be so hard." As Graham points out, fact check, everybody knew. And what's more, even Trumpansies are beginning to figure out that having health insurance is a lot better than not having health insurance. You know, because it's good to be able to go to the doc when you're sick. Thank you, Graham. Thank you very kindly. Okay, so yeah, we're halfway through the program, and there is Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, sweetie. How are you?
I'm bumbling, stumbling, and rumbling along. Had kind of a setback yesterday, like I said, so I'm back to not eating food again. It's getting annoying.
That's the thing about when you're feeling better. It's like when, you know, being bipolar, and I start, you know, I take my medicine, my meds, and I start feeling better, then I stop taking my meds because I start feeling better. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, wait, you have to take your meds so you can continue feeling better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a vicious cycle because I'm the same thing with food. It's like I started feeling better, so I started trying to introduce food back into, you know, heart, you know, the food back into my system, and it didn't work. And I'm like, oh God. So we're on the same boat.
Yeah, this is, and oddly enough, and, you know, not to make stuff too personal, and it's not particularly gross, but because of all the problems down in my various digestive areas, they gave me a prescription for, and you'd think I'd really like it because it's based on pork. For pancreatic enzymes, and I'm supposed to take it with every meal.
Okay.
So last night, I had a meal, and I thought, well, I'm gonna be good, and I'm gonna be proactive. And I've been eating some, doing okay. Not hurting, no agony, no nothing. So I ate my meal, and it was not outrageous. And I took my pancreatic enzymes, and within about 2 hours' time, I was bent double in pain.
Well, so you're thinking that the
beginning to wonder about the enzymes.
Mm.
You get the idea.
It's like saying the enzymes are supposed to help me, but it fucked me up.
Right. Because what happens is like when a duct to the pancreas gets blocked, the enzymes that the pancreas produces naturally begin to sort of eat the pancreas itself, which is where this whole process began, God, 8 years ago. And it's all tied in with the drugs that I take for cholesterol and triglycerides and yada, 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 yada. And I'm thinking, and I'm talking with Agnes about it, because, you know, Agnes is a nurse.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, she is. She is. When we got married, she stopped doing it for money and went pro instead and devoted her skills to the raising of our children. I mean, you know that Bible verse that says not a sparrow falls to the ground, but God knows it?
Right.
Yeah, our kids couldn't sniffle without nurse mommy being on top of them like a duck on a June bug. It was really an amazing thing to behold over the course of those years. But maybe I'll just continue this way, try to knock down another 30 pounds or so, get a little more serious about exercise, keep an eye on my diet, and who knows, I might stop being a type 2 diabetic and might stop needing the damn triglycerides meds and all of that stuff. So, you know, there's a potential upside. I mean, as much as I love a big old barbecued pork pig sandwich, maybe I'm reaching the point where I need to try a different kind of life and like live on that god awful stuff that, you know, I don't know, just, you know, air.
Well, as long as you don't start talking about tofu and stuff like that, then we're fine. Cause I don't care. I make
a mean pot of tofu chili. I mean, you know.
I have done some good stuff with tofu, but that's on occasion. I can't see myself living off of tofu, or, you know, having to give up cheese and just, you know, and bread, you know.
Well, I mean, that's one of the weird things. As I returned to eating, you know something that I ate with no problem whatsoever?
What?
Cottage cheese.
Really?
Yeah, not a problem in the world. Fruit, easy.
Yeah, I can do, you know, I used to do this, you know, I would mix, and it's weird, I would mix cottage cheese with oatmeal. I don't know where I came up with that, but now I'll do yogurt with oatmeal.
That sounds a little bit odd, but probably not terrible.
No, it's not, because I'll nuke. So I'll do that with some apples or pears, with a little brown sugar, and like Greek yogurt instead of butter, you know, and milk in my oatmeal. And it's actually, it's quite tasty.
You know what thrilled me is the fact that there is now instant steel cut oats.
Yes, and that's what I use.
As opposed to the rolled oats that we all grew up with. No, I love the steel cut oats. But we're gonna have me starving. And half the chat room screaming food porn if we don't stop.
This is Moran Monday.
It is that.
I was thinking, you know, because we have 45 saying that, there's a few. We have 45 going. I did not realize that healthcare was so complicated. We have Jimmy Kimmel being, you know, his casual racism last night.
Oh, you mean, oh my, what a funny name that Asian lady has.
Right, or just, why can't I think of my brother's name, who won Best Supporting Actor, talking with his name and asking.
Mahershala Ali.
Yeah, who, and his name is actually has been shortened. It was actually a lot longer before he shortened it. It was Miss Mashallah. Shabazz. It was like maybe about 10 more letters. So he's actually shortened his name since becoming Muslim. It was actually nine because his name was actually Hebrew. And then because he was fucking with him about his name, lifting up the young Indian young man doing the Lion King thing, you know, and the whole thing, like the bringing in the tourists and having them take pictures with Denzel Washington. It was, yeah. And then, and the whole thing about what happened with Moonlight. It's like,
you'll forgive me if the first thing I say regarding the Moonlight debacle is that somewhere Steve Harvey was laughing his ass off. And I mean, I'm no Steve Harvey fan, but you know, he's a little right wingy for my tastes. But
yeah, he ran his coon ass up to the White House, going to go meet with 45 and Ben Carson. I had no idea what housing and urban development was. I'm like, sit your monkey ass down for a Negro, and be quiet, you fucking coon. But yeah. So. And then watching the white people look like they just got gut punched, that was actually fun. When it was Moonlight that actually won.
Well, the thing is, the La La Land people were up there, and I mean, I didn't watch it live because apparently ABC doesn't think that DirecTV Now is a legitimate cable provider. Bastards. Neither does CNN, neither does Sci-Fi. God bless America.
You don't even get Sci-Fi, dude? Seriously?
Well, no, I mean, I get it on Direct. I get all those channels on DirecTV Now. I don't get ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox. Because they've got local, supposedly local over the air affiliates, and whoever says that has never tried to pick up an HD signal in mountainous country. But anyway, so I didn't get to watch it live, but I did watch the replays, and everybody up there, and I think maybe it's when they looked at the statuette and it said moonlighting. God, I'm so sorry.
Okay. That's right up there with Hidden Fences. Who did the Hidden Fences?
Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah. Michael Keaton at,
but anyway, it said Moonlight, and they were kind of looking at each other going, I don't think we're supposed to be here.
Right.
the people with the real egg on their face are, you know, at the beginning of the awards ceremony, there's always this long, boring speech about how freaking careful Price Waterhouse is with all the ballots and all the awards. You're of a certain age, so you can probably, you remember when Johnny Carson would talk about the answers to the questions being kept in a mayonnaise jar on Funk and Wagnall's front porch?
Yes.
As of last night, I'm pretty sure that's Price Waterhouse.
Right. And apparently, I actually got a little insider. This is what happens when you hang with rich gay people. Apparently, one of a member of my church, it used to be that he just wrote something about the envelope, he wrote, I'm not sure if this is a contributing factor to the debacle at the Oscars or not, but for many years, Mark Freeland, who also designed our wedding invitations, name drop, produced the envelopes and cards for the presenters used to announce the winners. Beyond the framed envelopes, the systems Mark had in place to ensure 100% accuracy for beginning to end were impressive, to say the least. But this year, in an apparent attempt to save money, the Academy moved that entire operation in-house. The reason they used an outside vendor like Mark is that they possessed core competency that is beyond anything that can be duplicated internally. In my opinion, the Academy attempt to save a few bucks cost them dearly. So that's one opinion. That, you know, they will try to save a couple of bucks and then the Price Waterhouse thing. But the bottom line is, for me, I mean, full disclosure, I have not seen either movie. I didn't want to go see La La Land because I get to that point being black that there's only so much whiteness that I can handle. And from all the reviews and from what all my friends who have seen La La Land, it was just an okay movie. It was just, you know,
everything. Michael and Madison put a really interesting piece from, what was it, the L.A. Observer or something on his page. Is that a thing there, the L.A. Observer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Saying that it's actually a propaganda film.
Yeah.
And I read it.
It's a propaganda film.
And he made
how things used to be and how white people wish things used to be, you know. And I'm tired of that shit.
From my standpoint, Tracy, I'm a pretty tough sell on musical theater. I mean, I know some of it. I like a little bit of it, but I'm not. I like my theater realistic. I like it to be a little bit like the earth I live on, where nobody breaks into song in the middle of a goddamn traffic jam. Which is how La La Land opens.
Right. And see, and for somebody like me who makes their living driving in traffic, bitch, Adrian, I promise you this, I am not breaking out into song when I'm stuck on the 405. I promise you this. I am trying to keep from putting out what is left of my hair when I'm driving in L.A.
You sons of bitches are making me crazy.
Pretty much, or when people are cutting in and out of traffic, or texting while they're driving, or, you know, just you know, any numerous things that, you know, will make me crazy. So, no, I'm not, you know, bursting into song at any given moment. I like, you know, I mean, I love my escapism. We have tickets, you know, season tickets for the Pantages and, you know, let's face it, musical theater is incredibly white. It really is. I mean, so whenever there's a chance.
Oh, it has been. Like this,
and it has been. So, I mean, like when we went and saw The King and I, for once, The King and I found that they caught it. It's like the entire cast, except for the few white people, were Asian. Just think. It wasn't Yul Brynner and Rita Moreno.
Okay. Well, yeah, and you know what? Right. I kind of felt I got a little bit of a feel bad over the weekend because Agnes and I just got done watching The Night Manager.
How was that? I still haven't watched it yet.
Okay, so can I just say that for what it is, for what genre it is, if you know what you're what to expect going in, I mean, to wit, John Le Carré. It was great. I mean, Tom Huddleston is a wonderful actor. Hugh Laurie is an amazing actor.
I love me some Hugh Laurie.
Well, and he is a top-notch villain in this. But I mean, it was engaging. Okay. I guess I've reached a certain age, Tracy. There's some stuff I can't watch. Like, Agnes and I started watching Rob Roy the other night just because it was there and, you know, you could, and so we did. And, you know, my people. Pale, redheaded, mean.
Honored.
Mean. But we got to the point, and it's old enough that I don't think I had, you know, I mean, for God's sakes, it started out as a book 200 years ago. I don't think I have to worry about spoilers. We got to the part where he's going to borrow the money from the nasty rich land baron. And you know that he's going to entrust it to the dude who wants to go to America. And dude is going to get robbed and killed and think he lost it. And it's going to get Rob Roy in terrible, terrible trouble with the nasty English-backed landowning gentry. And Agnes and I looked at each other and said, turn it off. I can't stand the stress. Okay. And so there are some stressful moments in The Night Watchman where, you know, Agnes will look up and go, you know, I think I need to go and get a cup of coffee or something. And I go, well, I'll pause it. She goes, no, that's okay.
No, that's okay.
Just tell me about it when I get
that's
back.
Okay.
Doesn't want to deal with the stress.
Give me the synopsis.
Now, here's the other side of The Night Watchman. It is a typical England's intelligence. Well, no, it's not typical. It's not typical because there's lots of bad English people, too. But ultimately, it turns on a plot, of course. Where else? The Middle East. Okay. And so you've got an over the top nasty misogynistic villain who is, of course, you know, Middle Eastern. Now, there is some balance because among the good guys, there's two South Asian people. So it reflects the modernity of the fact that, you know, there is some integration in British society where people who are not necessarily descended from Angles, Saxons, Jutes, Normans, or you know, Vikings are doing important things. But I just wonder if we can have a suspense film, and this was a series of 10 episodes. I wonder if we can have a suspense film where the bad guys are like, you know, Trumpanzees bent on blowing up the Super Bowl or something.
Kind of like, what was that, Black Sun?
Well, yeah. But I mean, I'm talking about, but because that's the reality. I mean, there are easily as many, if not more, threats by white nationalists, Trumpanzees, Klansmen, neo-Nazis in this country, you know, the economically anxious Trump voters, than there are by, you know, Muslim people.
Well, I mean, didn't they just catch this one guy that was talking about blowing up Target stores? And I mean,
yes,
there was I don't remember what Muslim sect he was from. I'm just saying.
You're talking about you mean that notoriously violent Muslim sect called Baptists?
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm getting to that point. Well, I think I posted this. There was an article written by this Middle Eastern brother from the UK, basically about the whole thing about, you know, he's an actor. And he's like, he's been in cast in like a lot of movies, and he always plays a Muslim terrorist. And he's like, I'm very tired of being cast. And the casting people had the nerve to say, well, see, aren't you lucky that you're Muslim because you're always working?
Yeah. I got to thinking about this when I saw an article that specifically referenced The Night Watchman by a young Muslim. Muslim doesn't mean no. You know, white folks can be Muslims too. Just say it.
Right.
But a young actor of Middle Eastern ethnicity, is that work?
I think so. I think that sounds.
But I'm a working actor. I've played a lot of roles, and he began to list off, you know, swarthy Muslim man clutching bomb on underground train.
Yeah, I think that's the same.
That's the same one, right?
Yeah, right.
And the casting directors say, "Well, hey, you're working,
right?"
And you know what the casting person said is not untrue. The goal in being a professional actor is to work and not have your job waiting tables be your primary source of sustenance.
But at what point, it's like my cousin. He's a working actor, but, you know, he's played a thug more than he's played, you know, a cop.
Well, yeah, but the thing that I immediately thought of, and because this actor is a young actor, I'm thinking, hey, maybe you've never seen Hollywood Shuffle. It's not like this is a new problem. I mean, you remember what was his last name's Taylor. What's his first name?
Robert.
Okay, he made Hollywood Shuffle like on a bunch of credit cards. It's still one of the funniest. It's still one of the funniest damn movies this side of Mel Brooks and Richard Pryor.
Where do we gotta eat too?
And then, you know, he goes to these casting calls and it's always the same guy, and I just remember, you know, he's playing that black hood. You remember the line, Tracy? Why you got to do that to my brother?
Right.
Remember him standing in front of the mirror practicing that?
Exactly. And it's the same line. In every, you know,
this is real white of me, but can we say that we're making progress? Is there a little bit of progress?
There's progress and then there's progress. There's progress that a movie like Moonlight won for Best Picture, even though they fucked up their thunder. But then there's when a sex offender like Casey Affleck wins an Oscar and Denzel Washington gets snubbed again. Then there's that.
Well, I think there's an entirely separate Academy Committee for snubbing Denzel. Okay, I mean, I just think there is. And you know, they had to find somebody else after Peter O'Toole died.
Right. It's like, okay, we can keep snubbing. Oh, see, the thing is, so he got his Oscar for playing a slave. He got one Oscar for playing a slave and the next one for playing a corrupt cop. So what does he have to do? He couldn't get one for playing Malcolm.
Oh, you got to kill my brother. Not sorry.
Basically, I mean, like you said, it's right out there. What does Trump have to do in order for people to say, okay, we got to get rid of this fool? He has to become black.
Well, we did kind of establish that, didn't we?
What does a person have to do? It's right up there with, and back to the Academy Awards last night. Now, not discounting the work that the brother did on, the O.J. Simpson documentary. I'm real tired of people with, it's 2017, y'all. Why are we still talking about O.J. Simpson? Whereas a movie like 13 didn't get, and talking about snubbing, this sister got snubbed for Selma, and now she got snubbed for 13.
Yeah. Let me mention a couple of other things, though. There are things to be grateful for out of last night's Academy Awards. One,
Viola Davis's acceptance speech.
Yes, but also the fact that Mel Gibson did not win Best Director for Hacksaw Ridge, because then we would have had to watch him come out and be personally crucified on stage at his own insistence. As it was, he just wandered around the after party mumbling about the Jews.
Because you know, I'm sure he's sure that's why he didn't win Best Director. But you mentioned what?
I'm just saw that I'm just breaking news. The LAPD officer that you know pulled the young man across his head. His name has been released.
Aha. Okay. I thought you were going to say that somebody, the justice had actually happened, but no, we just know.
No, come on.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I know. So, just another thing so like I said, we watch old movies. And I noticed the other night that The Silver Streak was available for viewing.
Yes.
And in fact, last night I was telling a young man, you know, he's in his 20s. I said, are you familiar with Richard Pryor? And he goes, I don't think so.
And he really wasn't in that movie that much, but the scenes that he was
Oh my God. I mean, it was enough to inspire somebody to bite on the idea of just giving Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor their own damn movie, Stir Crazy.
Right, exactly.
So you've got the scene in Silver Streak with the shoe polish in the bathroom and Gene Wilder trying to be cool.
Oh God. Oh, Jesus.
Which I guess I don't. Would that blackface scene be acceptable in 2017? I would like to hope so.
Well, see, because it depends on who it is. Because since Gene Wilder was such a kind of genius, yes. Jimmy, anybody else? No. It's because like right this morning I was watching television and I was doing homework and Kelly Ripa was on. She does an after Oscar show. Don't ask me why I was watching Kelly Ripa. Don't judge me.
You probably lost 15 or 20 IQ points. I just want you to know. I mean, I'm not criticizing.
I think maybe 30. But she was doing the movie posters from the various and sundry Oscar nominees, right? You know, and you know, from, you know, Hacksaw Ridge and, you know, and this and that. And I'm like, please God, you know, do not. Because she can't, you know, if she tries to do Fences, Moonlight, or Hidden Figures, I will, and they stopped. They did, you know, Hacksaw Ridge, La La Land, and whatever other movies, Oh, Manchester by the Sea, blah, 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 blah. So they did those. But I'm like, so at least somebody in their production team or whatever had the good sense for them not to even attempt to do, you know, the movie posters for those three films. Thank God. Because, you know, white privilege. Because, again, they wouldn't have seen the problem with that. Well, we're just, you know, paying tribute to these movies. What's the problem, black folks? Why do you guys get yourself so worked up? What, you know, what's the problem? The problem is that, again, like I said, Gene Wilder, like the movie, you know, the comic genius of Mel Brooks in Blazing Saddles, you know, Gene Wilder and Cleavon Little have on the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, that and, you know, are we awake? Are we black? We are. And we're awake, but we're very confused. But, you know, that's all Richard Pryor. And Cleavon Little got that job because they thought Richard Pryor might be a little too
Richard Pryor. He was a little bit too, because Richard Pryor was, you know, Richard Pryor was, for a lot of people who do not realize this, Richard Pryor was one of the writers on Blazing Saddles, and he was supposed to be in the movie.
But
he was actually supposed
too
to
edgy.
But too edgy.
And looking back. It worked. It worked.
Cleavon Little was sheer perfection. And you know what? And like you said, looking black.
Nobody could have done that "I get a kick out of you" scene.
I don't think
Richard could have done that as well as Cleavon did.
No. Richard Pryor was not that smooth. Although, if you think about it, though, I was about to say he was not that nuanced. But then, did you see Richard Pryor in Lady Sings the Blues?
Yes.
Now, when you see that was him in that performance, him in Bingo Stars, Traveling All Stars, and Molar King, Richard Pryor had a hell of a range. But I don't know if he could have pulled up that scene, you know, with the Camptown Ladies.
The Camptown Ladies?
You know? And I don't know if he could have pulled that off, like Cleavon Little, you know. They say you were hung, and they were right. You know? When I saw the movie as a kid, most of that shit went over my head, right? Because I had no, except for like, you know, when they talked about civil service, I got that and stuff like that. But, you know, they say you were hung and they were right. I had no idea what the hell they were talking about.
No, some stuff you had to catch up with.
You know, because it was rapid fire, you know. But, you know, as I got older and watched it, I was like, holy crap.
They got away with some stuff.
Oh, they got away with some stuff that no way. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, let's just say there's no way that they could have made that movie as with President Obama, and there's sure as fuck no way that I would dare make that movie now.
That movie could not be made now. But there's a reason that I've got an entire file full of clips from Blazing Saddles. One of which is,
"God darn it, you use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore."
There are three movies that I can pretty much quote verbatim: Blazing Saddles, Color Purple, and Harlem Nights. And I get this. One of my best friends, we cannot have a conversation. We cannot have an entire conversation without me quoting not so much Blazing Saddles, because she's never really seen Blazing Saddles, but I guarantee you there is not something that we've talked about, a conversation that we have, that we cannot talk about, you know, work in Harlem Nights or The Color Purple. Have you seen Harlem Nights, Bob?
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant.
Well, you know that scene when they're talking about sunshine, and I was talking about something the other day and it was so good that it made the man change gods, and so I said something, and my friend Sarah's like, "Well, of course you can say that." I said, "I can't even imagine that." She's like, "Girl, that's the same thing. That's what happened to Jan. She went from Jewish to Christian." You guys have to see the movie.
Absolutely. So the reason I mentioned, just to put a bow on this, the reason I mentioned the shoe polish scene in The Silver Streak, which is, of course, toward the latter end of the 70s, is because of a story that has arisen out of Louisiana Stan. And it centers on an election, a race for the 8th district seat in the Louisiana House of Representatives. And a guy named Robbie Gaddy is running for that seat.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, a conservative Louisiana politics site called The Hayride went digging and found a picture from 15 years ago of this self-same Robbie Gaddy at a church Halloween party. Emphasis on the word church.
Uh-huh.
And it is of him with his entire face and neck covered in black shoe polish and him grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. And the church in question was the First Baptist Church, ta-da, of Bossier City, Louisiana. I bet Jack in Shreveport could take us right to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Robbie Gaddy is outraged because he is a man of the gospel. And when the photograph was released, and by the way, the reason for the blackface was because 15 years ago, he was dressing up for Halloween, which he calls a fall festival, mm-hmm. because, of course, being a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, mm-hmm. evangelical Baptist.
Can't be Halloween.
Can't be Halloween because demons.
That's devil worship.
Yep,
that's
right.
Devil worship.
Right. So he said, 15 years ago, my church held a fall festival where all the volunteers were told to dress as a famous person. Tiger Woods was at the height of his popularity as a world champion, and that was who I was dressed as.
Tiger Woods not that dark, bitch.
Yeah, there ain't no resemblance. I mean, I guess he put some shoe polish on and carried around a mashy niblick or something.
Could he have at least gotten some cocoa powder? If you're going to dress up as Tiger Woods, you don't do that.
Yeah, you're going to be more of an off coffee.
You're going to be like a cocoa brown, man. Come on. If you're going to do it
and,
right.
And he said, shortly after this event, I was ordained into the church as a medical professional, ordained minister, and military officer. I live my life seeing only character, and I stand by that. I'm sad that my opponents have taken a good night at church and turned it into negative political mood, but I'm confident the voters of Bossier will not fall for their disparate attacks. So there's the question. Is going out in blackface 15 years ago relevant to a political race right now?
Yeah. Like I said, Gene Wilder being in a movie, because see, I would if one of my white friends or any white person that I knew on a Halloween night thought it was okay to roll up in blackface, because, you know, Halloween, and they didn't think it was offensive, then I would question as to whether they thought, because I'd be like, well, you can't know me and consider me a friend if you think that that's okay, knowing me and knowing my political views and how I view my race and how I view white people in general when they do stupid shit toward black people. So, Gene Wilder in Silver Street movie trying to get past white folks or whatever, it's okay. Somebody doing it now.
15 years ago, too. And that's the thing. Who else was famous in 2002?
whole lot of people. Oh, he was doing both. He wasn't doing Tiger Woods. He was doing Obama. Wait, 2002.
Yeah, he wasn't doing Obama. He was just mailing it in and doing blackface.
This is doing blackface. He was doing blackface. I mean, there's a whole lot of white people he could have picked from in 2002.
George W. Bush.
He could have done W.
So the question is, how did he immediately jump to, well, I'm going to be Tiger Woods? Hint, I mean, his face, he does, there's no resemblance, okay?
No resemblance.
I mean, people had to be walking into the First Baptist Church of Bossier City, Louisiana, and saying, well, Robbie, who in the hell are you? Well, I got a golf club, it's obvious, I'm Tiger Woods.
Or he's just a caddy. How about that?
I mean, how about that big old mustachioed caddy that Tiger Woods had? I can't remember what his name was. He could have got himself a pair of white coveralls and been him.
But I
guarantee you, people just laughed and laughed there in the Bossier City First Baptist Church. Oh, they just laughed. Because that's funny.
Okay. I forgot I just realized how quiet you were on Saturday. I didn't know. I was expecting you to go apeshit, batshit crazy on the DNC.
I just let that blow by because I was busy, among other things. I was busy watching the Sparkle Fart powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade move into Snit Condition Alpha.
Because when I saw heard the announcement, I basically didn't touch. I kind of stayed away from my. I was, again, stomach issues, stress. I talked to Will's mom is a psychiatrist, and I was asking her, but I didn't get to see my shrink because I was going to ask her about my meds because I've been feeling kind of off kilter, and I was going to talk to her about changing the dosage on my meds, and just of course on my appointment she called in sick on Thursday. I'm like, awesome. So I was talking to Tracy, Will's mom, who happens to, thank God, she's a psychiatrist, and I was asking her what if she thinks, and she asked me what the dosage of my medicine was, and I told her, she's like, double it, because I won't be able to see my shrink for another couple of weeks. And I'm beginning to already feel better after a couple of days, so I'm hoping that'll help. So I kind of shut down because of the fact my mom and I, this is amazing how, I know your parents are gone, and even though, mother-daughter relationships, you can act, I don't know how, your wife's name just totally escaped me.
Agnes.
Oh my God. I don't know how Agnes gets along with your girls. The mother-daughter relationships are kind of, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Challenging?
Kind of fucked up at times.
Challenging?
Okay. Thank you. You said challenging. I said fucked up. But I'll go with yours. I'll go with challenging. So, I got into this big heated thing about challenging thing about my mom with my mom over last week because I said motherfucker on my Facebook page and she actually called me and chastised me.
Uh oh.
And so yeah, and then I let her yell at me and so then
you ain't never too old to be called out by mama.
Right, but then she texted me and apologized, but I wrote, mom, you just live your life the way you want to live yours. I live my life the way, and she took basically in her evangelical head, I basically told her to go fuck herself, which is not what I meant. It was just like, I'm grown. I'm black. I'm a lesbian who cusses. That's just who I am. Deal with it. But then I realized what this is all about. And it's about appearances. Because, it's Facebook and other people are going to see it. It's the same thing with appearances when I got pregnant with Alex. And I think I told this story. When I found out I was pregnant with Alex, I was not going to go through with the pregnancy. I was going to have an abortion. I went to have the abortion. they found they couldn't have that. They couldn't do it. My best friend, who took me to have the abortion, told his mother. His mother told another friend from the church. They went to the pastor. And now I'm grown. I'm 21 years old, grown ass woman. And they took it upon themselves to go tell my mother that I was pregnant. I had no idea that she even knew I was pregnant. I went to go went to go visit her. I walk in her house, and first thing out of her mouth is, "So I guess I'm going to be I hear I'm going to be a grandmother." Now it was all. It wasn't that. Never that was I going to be a good parent. Was I ready to be a mother? None of that. It was just about appearances because, you know, somebody's going to know that I had an abortion. She rather have me gone through the pregnancy and all this, whether that now am I happy that I have Alex? He's the love of my life, of course. But that's not the point. The point is it wasn't whether or not I was going to be a good parent. It was just the fact that she didn't want anybody to know that I had was going to have an abortion. Fast forward how many years later, and I say motherfucker on my Facebook page, and she's so.
I'm not laughing at. I'm laughing with.
But you see what it is.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's all about appearances. It is like I keep trying to explain to her, you cannot pray the gay out of me. I'm gay. You can pray for me. You can pray that, you know, because I'm wondering about when she's praying for me. Are you praying for the demise of a relationship? You know what I'm saying? Or are you praying that Jen and I will have a wonderful marriage, that we will, you know, have a long marriage? You know what I'm saying? What, when you pray for me,
yeah.
What are you praying for?
You praying for or are you praying against?
Are you praying against? And see, and that worries and troubles me. And so, and of course, and then I went into that snit. So, and then so the only news that I saw, because I get messages from the from the DNC, and it said if you want to know who becomes our next DNC chair, you know, respond by yes, and when soon as they're elected, we'll let you know. And when I saw Tom Perez, I'm like, really? And again, you know.
I preferred Keith Ellison.
And as did I. And I have to say, I don't know a lot about Tom Perez. I had to do some research. And, you know. And this
well,
is
I checked in.
I was
scanning Facebook, and I noticed a post from somebody whose labor opinion I respect. I've had conversations with him. He's a good guy. A fellow by the name of Mike Elk. Who is deeply invested in labor activism in the South.
Okay.
And he said, I think Tom Perez is going to be okay.
Because among
other things, he said Tom Perez has taken strong stands on the rights of working people. And, you know, and you can gauge some of this by the response of the right wing, and they are absolutely having a fit. Why in the hell would Mitch McConnell come out and issue a statement about the guy who gets elected DNC chair? What's that to Mitch McConnell?
Yeah, what the fuck does
Mitch McConnell
about?
Doesn't have anything to worry about in 2018 because the Senate is going to remain in Republican hands just by operation of simple mathematics. You know, there are nine states that have Republican senators up for re-election, and those nine states are Nevada, Arizona, Utah, Nebraska, Wyoming, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee. And I probably missed one somewhere along the way. But the odds of even, of maybe Nevada's in play, but no other state is. So what the hell does Mitch McConnell open his mouth to talk about what a commie Tom Perez is?
He's part of a commie?
No.
There's so many words.
But, well, let me see. Charlie Pierce quoted him earlier today. I can find it here. Hold on. Won't take but a minute. I think I've got it. Oh, here we go. He is a committed ideologue who appears willing, quite frankly, to say or do anything to achieve his ideological end. It was the Competitive Enterprise Institute who basically called him a commie. His rewriting of U.S. labor law is probably the most fundamental attack on the free enterprise system going on at present. If he has his way, we won't just revert to the 1930s. We'll do things that even Franklin Roosevelt, and even Franklin Roosevelt, that's code for, you know, commie, couldn't do. Like eliminate vast numbers of independent contractor jobs and unionize those that remain. You know why Tom Perez doesn't like independent contractor jobs? Because employers abuse the independent contractor status to make sure that they don't have to pay things like unemployment and workers' compensation.
This is why taxi drivers, unions people have been trying to unionize taxi drivers since forever.
Yeah.
Teamsters have been trying to unionize us forever. Because the same thing, because if I get into a car accident, thank God I've never gotten hurt. If I get sick, if I get hurt driving this cab, I'm fucked.
Yeah. I mean, there are.
I don't know what to pump. I have nothing.
Every morning when I was in D.C., there would be a cab parked by the curb, and whenever we took a cab, we would take this cab. There would be a cab parked by the curb with a bumper sticker on it that said, "I'm a Teamster and I vote." We got in that cab.
I would love to be a Teamster.
Charlie Pierce says the Cato Institute had a meltdown too. Tom Perez essentially operationalized Eric Holder's radicalization of the Department of Justice. No civil rights theory too crazy to pursue. No litigants too awkward to pay off. Yeah, because civil rights theories are crazy. So while the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade is out there in snit condition alpha, the fact of the matter is Tom Perez is not the devil.
You didn't do the reverb.
Yeah, I did. You just didn't hear it, I guess.
Okay. Because it didn't come up. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on the phone.
That's why I'm not jumping out into the fray on it. God knows, I have seen it. Oh, I've seen it. God damn DNC! Oh God! Oh my God! He was for Hillary. Jesus Christ! Goldman Sachs! Son of a! It's there. Oh God!
No, I have to start doing self-care when it comes to what's happening. You know, I'm not going to completely, detach myself away from what's happening because I can't completely because then they win. But the thing is, it's gotten to the point that it becomes self-harm because it's ridiculous. It has gotten to the point where this man, he's never going to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, right?
Right. Because chicken shit. But there is a real movement out there.
Alec Baldwin?
Well, Alec Baldwin. But my part, I mean, if you really want to see his orange pumpkin haid splode, and I know this will drive.
Have Obama come?
No. You want to see his head splode, it won't just make. The Clementine Caligula's head explode. It'll make the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade's head just go pop. invite the person who actually won the popular vote to speak, to sit there as the guest of honor. And invite Alec Baldwin to be the comedic keynote. Yeah, see what I mean?
Oh, that would be... That would be... Because, see, I love to watch it because... I'm sorry. Off of a prison, it was funny as hell. And he was smart, and he was entertaining. And
well,
he
see,
was quick as hell.
Mussolini... Mar-a-Lago Mussolini isn't going is because of what happened the last time he did.
Well, he got dissed and dismissed.
Oh, he got run over, and there were not any skid marks in front of him. And
nope.
And you know what? I haven't seen it. I hope somebody tweeted at him, "Have you figured out who killed Biggie and Tupac yet?" You remember when Obama burnt him plumb to the ground with that?
Yeah, what did he? I forgot about that. What happened?
Oh, he said something. I forget what the setup was, but Obama said, and then Donald can get back to his real calling, figuring out who killed Biggie and Tupac.
Oh. As rumor has it, it's the only reason why he ran for president was to try to burn him. It was just because of Obama dissing him the way he did.
Well, I mean, he hated him from jump. That's what the whole... Look, he's the son of a fucking Klansman, okay?
And that's what people... That's like, you know...
He got busted for racism in his rental practices, okay? The guy is racist from jump.
And here's the thing. And I have, you know, I told you that my brother-in-law voted for Trump. And my brother-in-law is white. And so I spoke to my sister about it. She's hotter than fish grease, right? His son is a public school teacher, right? And he has a daughter who's pissed off at him as well. And so I haven't seen him since my birthday, which was definitely before the election. And I don't know if I could even be in the same room with him, but I'm going to ask him because it's like, did you notice that your wife is black and that your sister-in-law is a lesbian and that your son is a school teacher? You know, have you caught on yet that this man is a racist, that his father was a Klansman, that, you know...
Although Isaac did just point out to me via Twitter that apparently Trump voted for Obama in 2008.
Well, of course he did.
Which brings us around to the fact that George W. Bush is out there taking shots at him now. Agent Fred, that was metaphor, okay?
Did you see that shit that Bush is even talking about him being investigated?
Yeah, and talking about how important a free press is.
I was around
for those 8 years, of course, and I remember how important a free press was when they were, treating Judy Miller and the New York Times as a stenographic outfit. I do remember that, but...
It's a
list that we really don't have time for. Who isn't punking this guy now? Mark Cuban punked him the other day.
Mark Cuban has been at war punking him since before the election,
yeah.
Calling him a fake billionaire, and just saying that he's a disaster for.
Yeah, because whatever else you say about Mark Cuban, Mark Cuban speaks his mind, and
isn't he a libertarian?
He seems to have those leanings. But with, you know, with the help that this country affords people who acquire wealth, he made his money. He didn't get born into it.
No,
as far as I understand,
he actually worked for his money.
As far as I understand, from
what I understand too, he made his money. He wasn't, like you said, he's a real businessman, and that's one of his issues with Trump. He actually worked and made his money.
And you cannot afford you cannot accuse the guy in the White House of ever having done that. Hey Tracy. We've hit.
I know we got to go.
Yeah, I got to get out of here. I just want to make some room for a couple other people too. But it's been wonderful hearing from you. Thank you for handling the Oscar coverage portion of the program. It had to be done, and I'm awfully glad to have had some damn help in the process because I wouldn't have been much good.
Well, you know, as Californians, we're out of control. But here's the funny part: I very rarely watch award shows. The only ones that I really like to watch, and which is funny, is the Tonys because it's actually really entertaining. I don't really watch award shows. It's Jan, and she forces me to watch. And I didn't watch it at all last year because, you know, Oscar's so white. But I made it a point to watch it this year. I watched the whole thing through, and I'm really glad that I did. Before I go, did you get a chance to hear or watch Viola Davis's acceptance speech?
Oh, yes.
Now, if nothing else, and I'm on this note, this woman, if you get a chance, just Google Viola Davis acceptance speeches, or just because from her Tony acceptance speech, all of her speeches, like, and I have to give it to Jimmy Kimmel. He was right, because her speech, if there was such a thing as the Emmy Award for acceptance speeches, that woman, because, you know, her and Denzel got the Tony for Fences a few years back. Her acceptance speeches, can move mountains. And I'm not just saying that because I'm just a fan of hers. She's one of those people that if I actually saw her, I would just probably just fall out and just pass out and just turn into a bowl of mush because I just love her so much. I've loved her from Jump Street, but because she's a dark skinned black woman who no one would think no one by any stretch of the imagination would consider beautiful because she's so dark. And because of that, I love her so much. The Horn family, if you guys did not watch at the Academy Awards, because, you know, it's the Academy Awards, Google and watch, and just Google all of her acceptance speeches. And I just make sure when you Google her speeches and you watch her acceptance speeches, just have a box of tissue. Because even the speech that she did for Meryl Streep at the Golden Globes was better than anything you've ever seen. So that's it. So on that note, I'm out. Good night, y'all. Give money if you can. Good night.
Thank you, Tracy. You have a lovely evening. Bye now.
Thank you all. Bye.
The one and only Tracy, lady cab driver from Southern California. Yahoo News has the complete Viola Davis acceptance speech as well as the video of it. It is moving, and it is powerful. And check it out if you want to. But there were other speeches as well. The substitute speech offered for the foreign language film director from Iran was extremely potent, as was I can't remember which film it was now. The speech by the man who said, "I will oppose any effort to build walls between us." So, Jay Cruzen wants to know, what are you talking about, Tupac? Well, you weren't listening, Jay Cruzen. When Obama was burning Trump down to the ground a few years ago at the White House Correspondents' Association dinner, he said, "Now Trump can get back to what he really wants to be doing, and that is finding out who killed Biggie and Tupac. Clear enough? Okay. So here at 23 minutes before the hour, we have $161 to go to finish the month of February. And we're going to kind of have to do that this way because I don't have a list of who subscribes when or what time, but I know the end of the month is really, really tough. And so we don't have a bunch of subscribers for the 27th and the 28th. So in order to finish February, we need to raise $161. Otherwise, you know, we sweat $161 tomorrow, which is, you know, where we are. And I would like to, frankly, and I think many of us would, I would like to nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian tonight instead of hoping that we can do it tomorrow. One of my foodie friends posted a story that I saw earlier today. And I followed the link from the AV Club over to the place where the story originated. And I tried to do what I could to make sure that this was real. And as far as I can tell, it is. Tracy was talking about what I was or was not doing this past Saturday night. Well, we now know what Marcus Aurelius was doing. He was having dinner at his crummy steakhouse in his crummy hotel there in the old post office building on Pennsylvania Avenue. And we know that Rexxon Tillerson came to dinner with him, and we know that Nigel Farage, the alt-right, neo-whatever Brexit guy from the UK, was there, swilling wine. And we also know, this is a tacky More and Monday nomination, but still, it's okay. We know what Donald Trump orders for dinner. And we know that he orders the same thing every time. And we know, for instance, because of the... I did the backgrounder on the guy who wrote this piece. And apparently he's a right-winger. So it's not particularly hard on Trump. But the guy got into the tacky little restaurant there in the tacky hotel that the high-end hotel reviewers say, stay away. And took a bunch of pictures. I mean, if you want to see it, it's at ijr.com, Inside Trump's Secret Dinner, a side of the president you don't ever see. The article notes that the staff said he always orders the same thing. A 30-day dry-aged New York strip that he then has brought to him well done, making sure that there is a side of ketchup for his steak. And I'm sorry, but I can't help thinking about this. I was reminded when I read this of the time that my dad was sent down to Selma, Alabama for a continuing education class offered through Auburn University on management. And he came back and told us a story that obviously has stayed with me. They went to a steakhouse for dinner, and Dad ordered a steak. And when they brought him the steak, Dad looked at the waiter and said, "Would you bring me some A1 sauce?" And the waiter went back to get the A1, but the waiter didn't come back. The chef owner of the restaurant came back. Came flying out of the kitchen, according to my father. And my father hadn't even touched his steak. And he looked at my dad and said, "What's wrong with the steak?" And he was an immigrant. He was from Greece. My dad said, "Nothing. I just want some A1. He said, "You taste steak first. You want A1 after you taste steak? I'll bring you A1. Dad lit into the steak and looked up and said, "The A1 will not be necessary." The owner, chef, smiled. And before he left, he brought out a container to my dad of his proprietary Greek steak seasoning. And said, "You rub on the steaks, you grill, your whole family like." And that's exactly what he did. If you've ever read Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential, you know that he reserves a special scorn for people who order steak well done. Because as he will tell you in that book, at least high-end restaurants will inventory the steaks when they come in, and the crappiest, most miserable cut of beef, of the various cuts of beef, they will put in a separate container marked "hold for well done." Because chefs know that at well done, you're really not going to get, whether it's 30-day, dry-aged, rubbed, you know, rubbed with ambrosia, whatever, you're really not going to get the steakness of the steak when it's well done. So I am not the least surprised to find out that the guy who's living in the White House eats well-done steak with ketchup. Yeah. Quarter till, and I can only assume that Jay Cruzen has some sort of bone to pick with me. Go ahead, Jay Cruzen.
No, I ain't going to pick no bone. I love that story right there. That well-done steak thing, that is awesome. Because you know what? If I ask for steak sauce at a restaurant after I've ordered a steak, which I usually order between medium and medium well, if I ask for steak sauce, that means the steak ain't worth a shit.
Right. What are you burying? You're burying something.
Huh?
Yeah, you're covering something up. It's like the chef said, "What's wrong with the steak?"
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
And you know, I was down in Selma 5 years ago, and on the trail of my father, who by then had passed away, I went looking for that steak restaurant because I was gonna sit down and have a steak where my dad had steak, and I was not gonna ask for A1, but to my chagrin, I found out that it had turned in that the guy had made his money, left town. And the place where the steak place was now something, I think it was like a strip joint or something.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, anyway, there is a reason I called in, and this is it. And I want this to be the final frickin' time we talk about this. I hope so, because I support you, and I just put a challenge up a little while ago. We have to stop infighting. It has to stop, Bob. I mean, we picked up 2 seats in the Senate, 6 seats in the House, and we won the presidency by the popular vote. Please stop beating the hell out of people that didn't want to vote for Hillary Clinton, and let's come together and get this goddamn son of a bitch Donald Trump out of the fucking White House in 4 years, and in 2 years, let's please flip both houses.
Well, you under—I mean, and I understand.
I do know how hard it is for the Senate.
The Senate, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Senate's impossible.
I'm not going to say it's impossible, and it's really fucking hard. But we really have to work for that, and we have to work together. We can't keep going back and forth, bitching at each other. Oh, blah, 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 you, Donna Brazil, blah, 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 blah. All that bullshit you talk about. I mean, 3 million more votes. I mean, what else did you want? You got it.
Well, that's the thing, Jay Cruzan. When I talk about it, I'm reflecting what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. Okay? Like I said, Saturday night, with the announcement of the announcement of the election of Tom Perez, I watched the same bunch go into SNIT condition alpha all over again.
Well,
you know what, Jay Cruzan?
The same damn bunch that put Hillary Clinton a losing fucking candidate.
No. When I say I watched the same damn bunch,
goddamn thing with him.
No, Jay Cruzan. When I say I watched the same damn bunch go into SNIT condition alpha, I'm talking about the people who are still, Jay Cruzan, constantly pissing and moaning about the DNC, pissing and moaning about things that happened 9 months ago or older, and do not seem to be interested in unifying, do not seem to be interested in going forward.
Oh, wait a minute, but that's one-sided, huh? That's just one-sided? Is that what you're saying? That's one-sided?
I see a ton more of that than I see on the other.
Well, that's because they're in power. They're the fucking party. They're the hardliners like yourself that just sit there and say, okay, we're in power. We're DNC no matter what. We're the Democrats, you know. I'm going to stick behind this person no matter what. And you know, and that's your fucking party. And then everybody else is getting snubbed the fuck off.
Then get involved in the process and change it.
Everybody's trying.
I had a lengthy exchange with a Sparkle Pony on Twitter.
What the fuck is a Sparkle Pony?
On Twitter last weekend, and couldn't even convince the person that if he wants to, I mean, he bitches about the Democratic Party, and if you say to him, then okay, register as a Democrat, go to your local county meetings, build from the grassroots up. Oh, no, he's going to stand outside and bitch.
There are a lot of those that do stand outside and bitch, and I'll be honest with you, but you know what? You're the one standing inside and just kicking them in the fucking face every time they bitch. Just kick in the fucking face every time you bitch about it, because you're not willing to be a true FDR Democrat.
Says who? Says you.
Well, says the party.
Says
the Democratic Party.
You're losing me.
When is the last time that the Democratic Party picked up FDR, the Democratic Party leader? Did you picked up the FDR flag and fucking swung it high in the goddamn air and said, we're going to have a second Bill of Rights?
2016, that's when. Did you happen to read the Democratic Party platform out of Philadelphia? It was the most progressive Democratic Party platform since before, well, since Carter, even. Okay? There were things in there that had never been mentioned before. That were expressly put in there to make the platform more progressive. Same thing happened on a state level. I saw it here in West Virginia. It happened in a lot of state Democratic Party platforms. It's there. All we got to do is advance it. But the problem is, look,
How can I put this?
How can I put this?
We have to stop infighting. We have to express to each other.
And you're right. That's a problem. That's a problem. But what do you do? What do you do? You tell me. Oh, by the way, tell people what the challenge is. There's 8 minutes left. Tell people.
I remember I gave you a challenge.
Yeah, you put $50 on the table. You'll match the next $50 that comes in, and that'll take us only down to only $61 to go. Thank you, Jay Cruzen. I just wanted to make sure we got that out there, and I thank you for it. So, what is the solution? When people talk about things that are divorced from reality.
What's divorce from reality? What is somebody talking about that's a divorce from reality?
The idea of, let's see, I saw one the other day, draft Bernie for the People's Party.
Oh, no. It's all going to happen in the Democratic Party. It has to stay in the Democratic Party. But we have to take it over. We have to push it more progressive. I am a freaking Democratic Socialist to the bone.
Right. Are you registered as such?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're a registered Democrat. Then you're welcome to go to your county your county executive board meetings. You can participate, you can offer your thoughts.
Come on, man. I'm in Broward County. It's probably the most progressive Democratic Party.
You know what?
In the fucking union.
Well, that's
there's nothing for me to do here.
Well, then okay, then get involved with the Sister District Project. You ever heard of them?
No, but I have heard of Indivisible.
Okay, Indivisible is doing awesome work. Somebody else came up with another idea, and it's a really good one.
I'm just saying, Bob.
Well, but here, I mean, people
up, man.
People will want to Jay Cruzen. People will want to hear this. The Sister District Project is important, and it's really good for people like you who are in nice, safe, progressive spaces where you know you really can't do much to make things more progressive. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Sister District Project, and you can look it up online. Takes the energies of people in places that are unassailably progressive and directs them into places that aren't so much. You want to flip Alabama? Or Georgia or Mississippi or whatever. There's great work over there at the Sister District Project. And in fact, they just had their first challenge.
Mm-hmm.
There was a state Senate race in Delaware. And it pitted the same two, it pitted an incumbent Democrat against a challenger Republican, and they ran against each other last time, and she won, the Democrat won, by one vote. And that race would have made the difference as to who controlled the Senate in the state of Delaware. The Sister District Project got on board, and people from safe progressive districts all over the country phone banked, sent money, did everything. And you know what? Instead of beating the guy by one vote this weekend, she curb stomped him.
All right. Well, put that up on your webpage.
There's two congressional elections coming up, one in Montana, and I can't remember where the other one is, very soon. And that is, you know, that's going to be another place where the Sister District Project is involved. So I don't have the URL right at hand, but if you simply go online and look up Sister District Project, you'll find it. And for people who are in places where their progressive energies really don't add much to the quantum of progressiveness there, it's a great way to go forward. So, you know, that can happen, but Jay Cruzen, and I think we're doing ourselves no favors because of the way the numbers broke. If we simply pretend that the third partyism, you know, the Steiners and whatnot,
there's no third party option.
I'm thrilled to hear that from you, but it is not. There are enough people to change elections out there that think there are.
But yeah, I don't know about that. But there are enough fucking hardcore, just stay with the Democratic Party, no matter what, people, to keep pushing people to think that.
Well, I can't.
I'm really tired. I'm really tired of the inside Democratic Party, and it's really hard to keep pushing these goddamn Hillarycrats out. They have to be pushed out. They got to go. The Hillarycrats, the fucking
so
all the
so
Clinton-crats,
okay. Well, wait.
Fuck a Clintoncrat.
Well, okay. So there's a bunch of those in the House of Representatives who are going to be incumbents in 2018. Are you saying we need the House to become? I mean, a little bit ago you said let's throw out the Republicans in 2018.
Yeah, we need to.
Okay. Well, we also, you're not going to do that by getting rid of all the so-called Hillarycrats.
We got to put some primaries out there. There's got to be a lot of primaries put out there. You know, people who run on true progressive platforms win. Donald Trump ran on a progressive platform and he won over Hillary Clinton.
Okay. Well, we're out of time, Jay Cruzen, but I wish we had more, because the argument that there was anything progressive about Trump's platform is
just took the electoral college. He didn't really win, but whatever. But he pushed those ideas, the same ideas that Bernie was pushing.
Well, yeah, he bogarted them, and they were all lies. Yeah,
well,
he was going to drain the swamp, and then he stuck a Mnuchin in the drain hole.
Exactly. But then Hillary, and everybody knew that Hillary was a fucking corporatist, and he's a fascist. He's even worse. He's just a goddamn liar. But he fucking lied and used his damn fucking lies to beat her because she was a fucking corporatist, and she's a fucking
and
liar
because
too.
And look, you know, I'm the one, Jay Cruzen, you're arguing with the wrong guy. I'm the one who
know.
I'm the one who said
it.
She never should have run at all, that
no,
she shouldn't have run in 2008. And after she lost in 2008, she should have retired gracefully from politics or been Secretary of State or whatever.
And she's going to run again.
And I'm the one who predicted that.
I know she is. She fucking announced her candidacy the other morning. Did you see that shit? I will be with you 100% of the way.
Yeah, that's not declaring a candidacy. Only one person has filed candidacy papers, and that's the guy in the White House.
She's like a few sentences short of doing it.
Well, that's because there are people telling her that she should. But we have run over time. Thanks for the challenge, Jay Cruzen. I appreciate it.
Okay.
You have yourself a good night, man.
Thank you. We have to stop fighting each other.
Well, I'm not fighting you.
I don't want you to fight me, and I'm not going to fight you either. We have to stop, but we have to.
But again, we're out of time.
Indivisible.
I'll just say I still don't have any patience for the third party people. Sorry.
I don't either.
All right, later, Jay Cruzen.
Bye.
And so we're out of here. Thanks, everybody. We will begin tomorrow, hoping to raise $161. Jay Cruzen's got $50. He'll match the next 50 that come in on the table. Thanks to everybody who got us as far as they did. It is sincerely and deeply appreciated. Y'all have a good evening. Back tomorrow. Good night, y'all.